This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Hey, EcoShockers, I posted this special on Portland, the greening of the city, last week on my blog. Who knew anybody reads my blog? But immediately 400 people downloaded it, so I guess there's a lot of interest in this West Coast green example. So let's go. What makes the city of Portland so desirable as a place to live? It's walkable, a national leader in bicycle commuting. It's just installed streetcars. It's a green model in many respects. We have a lot to learn from Portland. Yet this West Coast allure also drives unique problems for the city. Sure, the economic crash brought high unemployment, as everywhere else, but Portland has become a refuge city, a place where people seeking jobs and a comfortable social culture come. That's raised unemployment and problems like homelessness. As other West Coast cities like Vancouver and San Francisco know too well, perceived success breeds its own challenges. To give you ideas for your own city, we're going to hear a brief from Portland's Green Mayor Sam Adams. But in a sign of the times, Adams cedes the stage to the two women who are leading the city's sustainability drive, Susan Anderson and Erin Flynn. All this is recorded by Alex Smith of Radio EcoShock at the Gaining Ground Resilient Cities Conference in Vancouver, Canada, on October 20th, 2009. At the end, we'll also hear a short clip from Sarah Severn of the Nike Corporation, which has headquarters in Portland. Did you know the air in Nike running shoes was actually a terrible global warming gas? We'll hear how Nike fixed that and their other efforts towards sustainable energy. Let's start with Rob Abbott, the corporate greening consultant and author of the upcoming book, Conscious Endeavors, Business, Society, and the Journey to Sustainability, as he introduces Portland's Mayor Sam Adams.
It is now a pleasure to welcome, I believe, three people representing the city of Portland to the stage for what I think is going to be a very engaging and thought-provoking conversation and exploration of climate prosperity, critical ingredients for a 21st century city. Most notably, I'm pleased to welcome Mayor Sam Adams to the stage. And Mayor Adams is going to be joined, I believe, by Erin Flynn, the Director of Economic Development for the City of Portland, and Rob Bennett, the founding Executive Director of the Portland and Oregon Sustainability Institute. The extent to which climate change and our response to climate change shapes strategy, and in particular economic strategy, is something that all cities are going to deal with. And I think for those of us who grew up in the Pacific Northwest, Portland has long been a beacon of the art of the possible, because it is an intensely livable city. Is it a city that has managed, I think, to make smart choices on an ongoing basis? And I think they're further pushing the envelope under Mayor Adams' call, I suppose, is the best word for it, that Portland will be the most sustainable city in the world. Certainly a conversation, a deep conversation about climate prosperity is part of that. So if I may ask Mayor Sam Adams, Erin Flynn, and Rob Bennett to come to the stage, and for you all to please join me in welcoming them.
Thank you. We've had a slight change in the lineup. We're going to have Susan Anderson, the Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, although Rob Bennett is in the room and available to answer questions. And we are going to leave time at the end if there's room on the agenda for Q&A. I want to thank the sponsors of this great event. I want to acknowledge Chief Williams. I want to thank Mayor Robertson for his hospitality. We had an opportunity to host a delegation from this area in Portland recently, and as part of that visit to Portland, we signed an MOU where we are jointly lobbying our federal governments to initiate the planning for high-speed rail to connect our two cities, and If we got the Japanese version of high-speed rail, it would take about 40 minutes between Portland and Vancouver, B.C. Wouldn't that be nice? That would be very nice. Very nice. And now with the mayor's announcement of his initiative today on Greenest City, when we met yesterday, you're going to be hearing about our climate action plan and our economic development strategy. We're going to be sifting through both of our efforts and looking for further joint efforts, whether it's joint procurement, whether it's joint additional lobbying on issues at our respective federal governments. We're going to grow the partnership. And thank goodness that His announcement was for Vancouver to be the greenest city, and my announcement is for Portland to be the most sustainable city. So we're not in competition with each other. That's good. Actually, it is a friendly and healthy competition, and to the benefit of both of our regions. And, you know, we are part of Cascadia and Salmon Nation. And I'm walking by the Bay Department Store, I was reminded that we also used to both be jointly administered by the Hudson Bay Company. In fact, Portland and the Oregon part of the Oregon Territory is what we called it. You called it the Columbia District. Was for about 30 years, it was jointly administered by the United States and by the Hudson Bay Company on behalf of Great Britain. And I think that actually is where Portland, the Portland part of it, got its bug for planning. The territory was administered out of the Portland area. And if you were a U.S. citizen, you followed U.S. laws. And if you were a British citizen, you followed British laws, even if you lived right beside each other. And what it required in the locale around the Portland-Vancouver area is it required them to sit down and figure out how they were going to live with each other. And it's really, I think, part of the reason that Portland has always been a city that tries to plan for its future more than others. Today we are going to get a little bit into the nuts and bolts because we're looking for your feedback. And my hashtag is Team Adams, if you're following on Twitter. We're looking for feedback. We're looking to compare notes. We're looking for the discussion that these conferences have. And a lot that has been said already this morning by the mayor and by Paul and by Gene and others has served as inspiration for us as well to take our efforts to the next level. One of the biggest challenges I have is that Portland gets amazing positive press internationally. And my challenge is for Portlanders to not think that we have made it, to not become complacent. We clearly have not. And making the comparison to Vancouver is very instructive. And on some things we're ahead, on other things you're ahead. For example, in terms of tons per person of greenhouse gas emissions, you're at about 3.7. Portland is at 14. But still, I think there are things that you might be able to learn from Portland. We have about 90 LEED certified buildings. In Portland. That's the largest of any city that we know of in North America. Our recycling rates are about 65%, and we have more trips by bike at about 6.5% than any other city of our sizes, and we're about the same size, the cities proper, in North America. But we can't rest on our laurels in Portland. We've got a lot of work to do. As you've heard today, we all know the world continues to change. And one of the conversations that we're beginning in Portland is around strategic planning. Today you're going to hear about two components. You're going to hear about the economic development strategy, the first one that the city of Portland has had since 1994 that I proposed with the Portland Development Commission, Aaron Flynn, and was approved. You're going to hear about the Climate Action Plan, which is a 3-4-year plan of actions on a 2050 goal, the same 2050 goal that you have around climate actions, and the 3-year action plan to get that going from Susan Anderson from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Those are two important pieces, but we're about to embark on a strategic plan for the city of Portland, a strategic plan for the next 25 years of the city that seeks to push beyond, much like the mayor's initiative this morning, that seeks to push beyond just sort of the components which has been the traditional way that Portland has done its planning. It's a triple bottom line blueprint for the city. And as Paul Hawkins says, it's intended to plan and recognize life in Portland as it happens for real life people, not life in Portland as it happens by jurisdiction, as it happens by department or bureau. When I first took office, and I took office on January 1st, I asked an outside firm to do an audit of government spending within the 143 square miles that is the city of Portland. I wanted to know all the layers of government and how much money was being spent. And what they found was that on all the way federal, state, regional, local, soil and water conservation districts, I mean, there are some locales and bureaucracies there that were fascinating. The total expenditures in my boundaries of our city was $9.7 billion. And I think one of the key components of a resilient city in the future is to recognize that even though we're very lucky, I feel very lucky to be mayor, and while we have a president that is as enlightened and progressive and focused on city as he is, but to recognize that we're not beyond this federal stimulus, which has been great, that's one-time money. That's not going to go on to forever. And a resilient city gets more alignment around some key strategic goals for the city. And so we're about to embark on this strategic plan, a strategic plan that will be more inclusive than anything we've ever done before. And it will push into areas like education, even though the city doesn't run the schools. Even though we will push deeply into the area of human health, even though county government is the next layer of government, then state, county government deals with human health. City government has nothing to do directly with the provision of services around human health. But the issues are so urgent, they are so imperative, and they are so difficult that we're trying this comprehensive, this very inclusive and robust strategic plan, an unvarnished, clear-eyed look at what's actually happening. For example, we're busy getting information from our utilities, and we're getting information from the federal government, and we're collecting our own information on buildings to determine, for example, and a lot of this information has been around for a long time, and we're seeking insight here, not just data, but insight. So we're looking for energy per neighborhood, by square footage of indoor space, and overlay that with median family income, to be able to rank our 92 neighborhoods in the city of Portland and begin to prioritize where the most emitting greenhouse gas neighborhoods are and the poorest neighborhoods are, and to begin to focus our efforts in a way that acknowledges we don't have enough money to do everything at once, or around the issues of chronic obesity in the United States and the fact that we're overlaying that information with food desert information in the city, not just food, but good food, and how many houses have access to good food. And we're looking at combining that with information about the number of Portlanders that are signed up for health care. And it should be no surprise that probably the most unhealthy neighborhoods are the ones that don't have access to good food and don't have health care. And to begin to shape and prioritize our work. So what you're going to hear today is in two areas, and it represents our initial work. One of the organizing principles that we have that you'll probably hear a little bit more about is the idea of the 20-minute complete neighborhood. You've been on the forefront of density. And we're taking inspiration from your work to also look again at the notion of 20 minutes, meaning you can walk 1 mile to get what you want and what you need. 2/3 of all trips in the city of Portland have nothing to do with going to or from work. 2/3. You're way ahead of us in terms of the trip not taken alone by car. Portland is ahead of much of the rest of the United States. So I'm the first to acknowledge, as proud as I am of the city, that the praise that Portland gets when you look nationally in the United States, it's high praise on an incredibly low standard. And that's why we look to cities like you. That's why we look to cities and spend time in Europe. It's why at the end of the month I'm going to Japan, that even does better than you and Europe when it comes to energy efficiency. So today you're going to hear about the idea of the 20-minute complete neighborhood as an organizing principle for our city, and how we're going to take the green dividend that Portland has. We have embraced the notion, as Cam talked about, of good planning, good investments in planning in transit. And we, the Portland drive, we drive about 20% less than comparable cities. And for us, that makes us about $850 million more economically resilient, because Portland doesn't have a car manufacturing company. We don't have oil wells, and we don't have car insurance companies. And so every dollar spent on the car in Portland is a dollar that leaves the city. But because we drive 20% less, there's a green dividend. And Joe Courtright, you can Google him, has done some great work on manifesting and monetizing and recognizing there's a green dividend of about $850 million that stays in the city of Portland because we drive less. That should inspire Portland to do more, not rest on our laurels. So it's now my pleasure to introduce, and I'm going to just point out she is the Director of Planning and Sustainability, because one of the first things I did when I became mayor on January 1st is I merged the two bureaus. Gone are any vestiges that sustainability is something over there and planning is something over here. In Portland, they're now combined, and you're going to hear from one of the best leaders in planning and sustainability in the nation, Susan Anderson.
So it's not hard to be the best when you're the only director of planning and sustainability in the nation. I think I kind of like this. I don't know how long this is going to last. So good morning, and good morning. Make sure everybody's all right. So one of the things my grade 8 speech teacher taught me right away was that you should always know your audience. Who are you talking to? So, okay, well, it seems like it's about a third in terms of business, NGO, and government. And that's great. I think it'll give us an opportunity to have the beginnings of a conversation about how to have a wide perspective that it's all of our parts in terms of making change happen. As Mayor Adams said, in January, I became the first director of both planning and sustainability for the city of Portland. Most cities have a planning department. A few, including Vancouver, do have sustainability offices. And by putting these two things together, what it did was really take sustainability from off in the corner. It was that cool little thing over in the corner there, and it brought it mainstream so that everything we're doing in the city, planning, management, our own looking at how we run our city within the city government, has sustainability as a theme. For decades, really, Portland, like Vancouver, has been a nationally and internationally known place for doing land use planning, for thinking about things like smart growth. 9 years ago, we opened what was called the Office of Sustainable Development, and it was a city department responsible for things like solid waste and environmental issues, green building, and several other issues. And at the same time, it was sort of a hybrid in that about half of its funding came like a nonprofit. So we did work with foundations, we had grants, we had contracts, we had lots and lots of partnerships. But by putting these two things together, we've really changed how we're looking at the city so that we're bringing together and trying to plan Portland not just as a sustainable city, but as a beautiful city, a functional city, a people-centered city, and very much a place that's full of opportunity. And we're doing it in a way. So how many of you here are planners in one sense of the word or another? Okay, so we spend a lot of time talking about land use and zoning and planning codes and all of those things that are in some ways very, very strict and immovable. So by putting these two things together, we brought in a new set of tools, and we're looking at new technologies. We're looking at research and development. How do we have creative financing? How do we look at different demonstration projects and ways of changing and working with behavior of how people actually are in cities that go beyond planning and codes? So far, I think the combination of the two sets of tools are working really well. What I want to talk about first is our climate action plan. It was the first project that we've done since we started this new office. To do that, I have to take sort of a big step back in time to 1993. So I had just was out of graduate school, and I had met some of the city council members in Portland, and I thought global warming was real. We called it global warming then, not climate change. And so I met with a couple of different city council members, and we began the task of putting together our own local action plan on global warming back in 1993. And at that time, we weren't really sure how to do this, but we came up with a methodology for actually doing the carbon footprint. It's the document there on your left. So we came up with this methodology for developing our footprint, carbon footprint, citywide, transportation, housing, commercial, and industrial. We did that because we believed, as I think all of you do who are here working and caring about cities, that cities have a huge impact on greenhouse gas emissions because we're in charge of codes, because we do housing, because transportation and land use, and we use a lot of energy in our own buildings. So in 2001, 8 years later, we got a much better cover on our plan, and then we moved ahead and set a goal of a 10% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions from 1990 levels by 2010. So we're almost there. 16 years have passed, and an evaluation of what's gone on since then has shown some pretty impressive results. So per capita emissions in Portland have fallen by 19%. Yeah. And that's happened for a whole lot of reasons, and most of the reasons didn't have anything to do with because anyone really understood climate change or that we actually were working on the issue of climate change. It happened because we were trying to make our businesses more efficient. People were cutting costs. We were trying to have more livable neighborhoods. We wanted to clean up our local air quality. So the per capita reduction actually translates, though, only into about a 1% total reduction because all of the people who have moved to Portland over the past 16 years. So when you look at this graph here, you can see that the blue line there shows U.S. emissions, and U.S. emissions are up 17% during the same time period, and in Portland, we're down just about 1.5%. So you can see that there's clearly some things that are going right. And again, those things happened while we were having a very strong economy, a clean environment, and we were doing this, again, not because people were really focused on climate change. So how did we do these things, and what were some of our achievements? I'll start with transportation and land use. Most of you have probably heard about our urban growth boundary. Originally, more than 20 years ago, we established a boundary ring around the 20-plus cities and three counties that make up the metropolitan area of Portland, and we did that to protect our farms and forests. And little did we know that it would be our best way of actually reducing energy use. And so the impact of the urban growth boundary has been to really help us develop a place where we can take transit, where we can bike, and where we can use our feet to get around. The result is that we've reduced per capita vehicle miles traveled 7%. We've reduced gasoline use 13% per person, and increased transit ridership has doubled. On the transportation front also, bicycling. So bicycling has taken off, and it's taken off for two reasons. One, because we have great infrastructure now. You can get around safely. And two, because it's become cool. So it's become so that if, you know, you can be a $500 an hour lawyer, and if you have, you know, your helmet on, you walk into the meeting, you're someone that I don't know, it's just become sort of the thing to do. So we now have about 6% of all trips now are done by bike. Last summer, we did bike counts coming over the bridges from the east side to the west, and 16,000 people a day was the average coming downtown. Also, in terms of things that are going on related to sustainability and energy and efficiency, is 25% reduction in water use. Again, one normative change made that difference. People decided it was okay for their lawns to go brown during the summer. You know, that's a whole lot different than doing technology change. So normative changes can really have a huge impact on resource use. We also looked at city government energy use. We've now cut our energy bills by $3.5 million per year. Again, we didn't do that primarily because we cared a whole lot about the environment. It was because city council was looking for ways to cut our energy use to save money, and it's something that any city could do. We have a green building program that has been very successful in the city. As the mayor mentioned, we have 90 buildings in the city of Portland and about 200 in the metro area that either are completed or are underway that are to be LEED certified. We have a green building hotline so anyone can call in for information, and a best business center, which is a one-stop shop where if you are suddenly in charge in your company of trying to green up your company, you don't have to run around town trying to figure this out. It's one place to figure out where to get bus passes and how to do energy efficiency and water efficiency and green building and such. Portland has also reduced its emissions due to investing in renewable resources like wind and solar. We have a renewable portfolio standard that says 25% of all new electricity needs to be generated by renewable resources by 2025. We have a promotion program focused on solar energy. Our weather is a lot like yours in terms of our liquid sunshine, we call it. But when you look at it and compare it to most of Germany, it's just about the same. And you can see how much solar has taken off there. So we literally have hundreds and hundreds of solar installations in the past year, and we're very excited about it. We also generate electricity at our waste treatment plant. So every city has a waste treatment plant, lots of waste sewer gas. So we thought, why don't we put out two big jet engines and generate electricity there. And so we're now generating $700,000 worth of power out at the wastewater treatment plant. Another way to impact greenhouse gas emissions is, of course, recycling and waste reduction. Portland residents and businesses recycle 64% of our waste, where our new goal is 75% by 2015. So those are some of the things that we're doing. A lot of those things, we have been sort of neck and neck with Vancouver, with San Francisco, with Seattle. I think the four cities, we were talking yesterday about having a set of sister cities. We should have a green sister cities, West Coast Coalition. We talk to each other a lot, and we've learned and continue to learn a lot from each other. So what's up next? Well, I did show you that we went and fell 19% in terms of per person greenhouse gas emissions, but we have a long way to go. And latest science, of course, tells us that we need to do an 80% reduction in total emissions by 2050. I'm not going to go through the new draft plan right now. It's going to council on the 28th of this month. It will be up on our website, and I'll give you the website at the end of my conversation here. One thing that's really important about our climate action plan is that it's not just about carbon, and I don't think it would be successful if it was just about carbon. The new plan really closely aligns with the Portland plan, the strategic plan that the mayor talked about, and also our economic development strategy that Aaron will talk about in a few minutes. Also, the whole idea of peak oil and understanding that even if, for the skeptics, there's probably none here, but in most of the audiences I talk to, even for the skeptics about climate change, you would want to take these same actions anyways, because sooner or later, and it's likely sooner, oil is going to become too expensive to get out of the ground, and we need to make some changes to keep our communities resilient and ongoing. So there's many things that are now kind of woven through these three, four, five different plans related to what we're calling the 20-minute complete neighborhood, related to what we're calling eco-districts, where we're taking parts of the city and looking not just at land use and transportation, but how does housing and affordable housing and sort of the whole green, like it's sort of like taking a green building and taking those ideas out throughout an entire neighborhood. We're looking at stormwater issues, green roofs, planting trees, all the same things that most of the cities that I work with are working on. But we're now taking it out separate from what were just our climate action plans and really trying to weave those into our land use plans, our transportation plans, housing, affordability, and then taking things like education and health and seeing how those things interconnect. So we're beginning to move on. I just want to talk about one more thing, and that's something called Clean Energy Works. So Clean Energy Works is along the same vein of interconnecting everything. It's first and foremost a job creation program to put hundreds of people who have been in the construction industry to put them back to work. So it's also a energy saving program. It's also helping families cut costs and reduce our carbon footprint. So the project is a pilot. It's a 500-unit pilot, and then we're going to scale this to between 5 and 10,000 units per year. As a lot of you know who've worked in the industry or in and around energy efficiency, we've been focused for a long time, the U.S. Green Building Council and others, originally on new construction. But most of the buildings that are going to be here in 2050 are already built today, and so we need to focus on existing construction too. The missing piece to this puzzle has been upfront capital, patient capital, and so this project tries to solve that problem. The way that it works is that a homeowner signs up, They receive a home energy analysis and a list of contractors. We then provide sort of what I'd call a concierge service. We're hand-holding people to get the projects done. Contractors come out. They choose what they want to get done. And then it costs somewhere between, let's say, $5,000 to $12,000, depending on what they decide to do. The work gets done without any cash up front. Residents then make the payments for this $5,000 to $10,000 on their electric or gas utility. So this is a partnership that took literally years to put together. It has both of our private electric utilities, a natural gas utility, nonprofits, state, city government, the county government, and then most important, a private bank, Shore Bank, as our financing partner.
You've tuned in to Radio EcoShock. We're listening to Susan Anderson, the sustainability advisor for the City of Portland, describe how the city is greening. We've got more to come with Aaron Flynn as well. So think about this in terms of your own city or town.
And so we're very excited about it. We think that it's the way to go in the future. There has been in the United States, and I think in Canada, a push for a model that would allow people to pay these same kind of loans back on their property tax. And that's something that we've just also passed in Oregon, but it's something that if you haven't done here, it's something that I think is a great opportunity. So this model of on-bill financing gets rid of the problem of upfront cash. And then let's say I have the loan and I move. The loan stays with the meter. It stays with the house. And so it's able to just keep on going. And so we've always been looking for a way to take this $5,000 or $10,000 that nobody ever has to come up with. And if you did have it, you remodel your kitchen. You don't go and insulate your home. And so those are some of the things that we're pushing forward. Those are really practical things. And unfortunately, to reduce greenhouse gas emissions there's not a magic wand. It's millions and millions of actions every single day that are going to make the difference. So to close, I just want to talk for just 1 second about the green economy, and then Aaron Flynn from our economic development department will focus on that. The one thing I think that's important is up here are a list of some of the companies. There's literally hundreds and hundreds of companies in Portland and in Oregon who are making money by selling more sustainable products, technologies, and services. And really, the one thing that I do know for sure is that the first cities and the first countries that understand this and that put sustainable development as a priority, they will be the economic winners, because they will get to sell, and hopefully it'll be us, in Vancouver and Portland and your cities, they get to sell these technologies and projects and services to everybody else. So here's our website, and if you'd like more information, please go there, and we look forward to the rest of this conference to share information and to learn from all of you. Thank you.
You are listening to Green City leaders from Portland, Oregon, explaining their plan to make a more livable and sustainable city. Portland has become a model for many of us around the world, so let's find out how it works.
So the economic development strategy calls for creating 10,000 new jobs in the next 5 years. It also upfront embraces the reality that Portland has not turned its quality of life into as successful of an economy that we need. Even during the best of times, we had twice the percentage of the working poor than Seattle on a per capita basis. And now, during this recession, because we're a manufacturing city, because we're a city of very small businesses, we've been, for many months, the place of the highest unemployment. So this new economic development strategy, again, the first since 1994, has been critical in figuring out how we monetize, how we take our living laboratory and turn it into a quality economy. And I'm really pleased. She hails from the Northeast, including work in Boston. She's done a great job in turning things around at the Portland Development Commission, which is our Arms Lake development arm, Aaron Flynn.
Hi, everybody. Nice to see you. I'm Aaron Flynn, as the mayor said, from the Portland Development Commission. And I'm going to give you a high-level overview of the city's economic development strategy. This strategy was adopted in July of 2009, just a few months ago, and this is the first adopted strategy by the Portland City Council in 15 years. So this is very significant for our city, and I do want to thank Mayor Sam Adams. He has been a staunch advocate for economic development and business development, and I think this is a welcome change for the city of Portland. Portland has historically led with a social agenda and with an environmental agenda, and that has reaped tremendous rewards, as we just heard from Susan Anderson. But Portland has not always been perceived as a business-friendly city. And so I think the enterprise that we're engaged in right now is really demonstrating how a city can be committed to quality of life, to sustainability, to reducing the carbon footprint, and also growing a robust economy, a deep labor market. And that's what we're trying to accomplish. And we're trying to demonstrate how a city with focus and with a clear strategy can accomplish those goals. We see a shift taking place right now, I think, with our city council and across the city, and a very strong desire to be more strategic and focused in our economic development efforts. And in part, that stems from our high unemployment rate. We get hit very hard by recession. But I think it also reflects a growing recognition that there is a complementarity between sustainability, the values that we hold dear in Portland, global trends, and market forces. So again, we're trying to bring those all together in this strategy. I'm going to provide you with a high-level overview of the strategy, and I don't have time to go into detail on all aspects of the strategy, so what I'd like to do is focus primarily on our clean tech work. So the strategy starts from the premise that Portland historically, as I said, has not been sharply focused on job creation and business development. It's not been part of our DNA, like cities we like to compare ourselves to, like Austin, Texas, or Denver, Colorado, or Boston, Massachusetts. What Portland has been remarkably good at over the past 20 years is placemaking. And I believe we have more urban planners and architects per capita in Portland, Oregon, than anywhere else in the country. And it shows. We have created a wonderful, livable city. As the mayor mentioned, we are recognized nationally and even internationally for our quality of place, for our high quality of life. We get wonderful press. We rank very, very high on all the city rankings. And those far-sighted investments that political leaders made 20 and 30 years ago in transit, in land use, and central city revitalization have paid dividends. They've created this great city. And what we've seen is this migration of young talent to the city of Portland. We are always in the top five cities in terms of destinations for young talent, and we've seen a 50% increase of 25 to 34-year-olds choosing our city as a place to live. Many of them, frankly, though, come without jobs because they want to be part of this culture that we've created in this wonderful city, and that's actually contributing to our high unemployment rate. So it's sort of this double-edged sword. People want to come to Portland because it's a great place, but at the same time, have we built the economy that can engage all of these people in a meaningful way? So as the mayor said, I think what we're starting to recognize is that this quality of place that we've created has not automatically translated into job creation or economic growth. What we do believe is that we have a unique opportunity right now to build our economy, to build that robust and deep economy through a focus on clean technology. We strive to be the most sustainable economy in the world, rivaled only by Vancouver, British Columbia. And again, it is a friendly, I think, and really positive kind of rivalry to spur us all on. We do believe, though, that we have all of the right ingredients. And clean tech actually has been one of the big bright spots in our economy, one of the few areas where we're seeing growth. We have a large concentration of firms in clean technology, in renewable energy, in energy efficiency and green building, and in electric vehicles as well. And in September, the Pew Charitable Trust issued a national study that compared all of the U.S. states and looked at the concentration of their economies in clean tech. and it found that Oregon has a higher concentration of jobs in clean tech than any other state in the country, and that we are among three states with the largest and fastest growing clean energy economies in the United States. So we have something here. We have a growing concentration. We also have a tremendous manufacturing capacity in Portland, Oregon, a historic strength in metalworking, industrial machinery, and transportation equipment that is really placed so well to help build that green economy. And then as Susan talked about, as well as the mayor, decades of leadership on environmental issues that really now have paved the ground and created this fertile ground for experimentation and a demand, actually, for renewable energy and for the technologies that are going to build the economy of the future. Another piece I think that we can't underestimate is really this green ethos that permeates Portland. And so the population at large is very predisposed to want to engage with new technologies, with new behavior. And we have a lot of what we call early adopters in Portland. So, you know, we have, I think, the highest rate of Prius drivers. We have the highest number of bicycle riders. We have a large population who's interested in shifting to mass transit. So all of these are beginning to combine the market opportunities, the global trends, the early adopter green ethos in our consumer culture, as well as the far-sighted policy framework to build this new green economy. So as the mayor said, our goal is 10,000 new jobs in 5 years. It's an ambitious goal, and we're going to accomplish it by being very strategic and focused. And we're going to focus in three key areas. The first is to maximize the competitive environment for traded sector companies throughout our region. The second is to drive urban core innovation, and this is really referring to the next generation of green infrastructure. And it's this notion as the city as a living laboratory, both building out green infrastructure, eco-districts in our urban core, as well as moving toward this notion of 20-minute neighborhoods. And then finally, scaling small firms and really building a stronger, deeper entrepreneurial economy in Portland, Oregon. We have, again, this tremendous talent flocking to our region. How do we harness it to a world-class business infrastructure to grow companies? We don't have a lot of large companies in our region. We need to grow the talent that exists in our region and build companies in Portland. The strategy focuses on four targeted industries, traded sector industries. The first is clean tech, and I'm going to talk more about our clean tech strategy and the subclusters within clean tech that we're focused on. The second target industry is the activewear and outdoor gear industry, and we're going to hear from Nike shortly. Nike, Adidas, and Columbia Sportswear anchor our activewear and sportswear industry. The third is software. We have an incredible constellation of technology talent in our region. This is a growing area of focus for us. And then finally, as I mentioned, our advanced manufacturing cluster, the historic capacity that we have in metalworking, transportation equipment, and industrial machinery. We still build things in Portland, Oregon, and we don't want to lose sight of how important that is as a foundation for economic growth. So I'm going to turn now to our clean tech strategy. I don't have time to go through all four clusters, but I do want to recognize that I think as cities and municipalities talk about green jobs, green development, green economy, that we have to be really cognizant of two tracks. We are making a big play for clean tech as an industry, and I'm going to talk more about that. And that's one aspect of building a clean economy. But the other is really the greening of all businesses, regardless of industry. So adopting sustainable business practices across a wide swath of industry also is a high priority and a key focus of our strategy. So focusing on clean tech, we call this climate prosperity, the notion that you can build businesses, grow jobs, innovate, and simultaneously reduce your carbon footprint. And we have some real concentrations and advantages in Portland, Oregon, in wind energy, solar manufacturing, green building and development, as well as transportation and energy storage. And I'm going to take just a minute to give you a snapshot of what's happening in each of these industries and how we're beginning to build this cluster to really drive economic growth in our region. The first cluster or subcluster within clean tech that I want to talk about is solar. And while we are very focused on building from within and focusing on those sort of indigenous talents that we have in the Portland region, I will say that solar has been our most aggressive recruitment play. We have really sought quite aggressively to anchor solar firms in the Portland region over the last several years, and we've had good results. We've seen 7 solar manufacturers select Portland in just the last 2 years, and the cluster is anchored by the German company Solar World, which is the largest solar cell manufacturing plant in the United States at 480,000 square feet. This is a company that transforms raw silicon into solar cells. And it is the anchor for the cluster. And so what we're seeing is the development of a supply chain around Solar World. We're seeing other activity in Solar World because Portland is now on the map with Solar World as the anchor of this cluster. And all of this work has been aided by an aggressive incentive program by the state of Oregon, the Business Energy Tax Credit, which enables solar companies and other companies building energy-efficient buildings to write down the cost of those buildings with a tax credit. This has been somewhat controversial, but it has reaped great dividends, $1.5 billion in investment in solar, and when we're fully built out, 2,000 jobs in the industry. Wind energy. We are home to Vestas and Iberdrola, the North American headquarters of the Danish and Spanish companies, respectively. And these are the Adidas and Nike of wind energy, or the Pepsi and Coke, whatever analogy you want to use. So we're very fortunate to have these, again, as two of the big anchors in this industry. And we expect to see U.S. wind growing by 19% in the next 5 years, and we'll see also growing demand for parts, which we expect will exceed supply by 2010. So the big play here for Portland, Oregon, is how do we create opportunities for our local supply base, for those traditional manufacturers to supply to this growing market? So we're building wind farms. We've had this incredible windfall, no pun intended, of stimulus money coming in, growing both the headquarter functions that reside in Portland as well as the build-out of new wind farms in our state. So our play now is how do we create the capacity within our traditional manufacturing sector to supply the parts, components, blades, gears, etc., that this industry is going to need. And again, to create that supply locally so we're not seeing the sourcing globally that, again, contributes to a larger carbon footprint. Another area where we're seeing a tremendous amount of activity is in alternative transportation and electric vehicle. Here again, a really interesting link between old and new. Oregon Iron Works is a traditional transportation equipment builder. They now have landed contracts for streetcars from Portland, demand from Portland with our streetcar that Susan mentioned, as well as Tucson, Arizona, just ordered 7 new streetcars from Oregon Iron Works. Oregon Iron Works is the only manufacturer of streetcars in the United States, so a really nice blending of traditional and new economy. Revolt Technology, we recently just landed this company. It's a zinc battery company, Swiss company, that is going to locate its research and development function in Portland, Oregon. We're rolling out Nissan's electric vehicle with 1,000 charger stations in Portland, Oregon. And here again, it's that early adopter consumer. I think Nissan's rolling this out in several states, but most dramatically in Oregon because there's a recognition that consumers in Oregon are interested in this technology. They will buy these cars. They will test the new charger stations. And we're also seeing a lot of startup activity in what we call disruptive technology, single-person vehicles, a lot of activity in that space in Portland, Oregon. In the state, actually, as a whole right now. Finally, I think what many consider our sweet spot is the green building and development community. As both Susan and the mayor mentioned, we have more LEED certified buildings per capita than I believe any other city in the U.S., although I know Chicago is nipping at our heels on that one. This is probably the most organic of the clean tech sectors. This really grew out of our planning and development culture, and then sort of the demand side pull of our green building policy helped this community build the expertise that they're now exporting around the world to the Middle East and China, and working with those communities to build more efficient buildings and apply greener techniques. We had an opportunity yesterday to learn about your Living Building Challenge here at the University of British Columbia. We're engaged in a similar effort in Portland, building the first net zero large-scale building that will be a center of excellence, combining private, public, and nonprofit tenants in a single building to drive the next generation of innovation in green building. Eco District, Susan mentioned, as well as Clean Energy Works. So again, as you put this all together, you start to see what a green economy looks like. And I think one of the things to recognize is often green jobs are hard for people to understand. What is a green job? All of these jobs are green jobs. Research jobs, technical jobs, professional, executive jobs for small contractors. It's a very dynamic economy that's emerging. So there's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of good stuff happening. I think we're getting more focused, more strategic in this work of building the clean tech economy. But we also have some pretty serious challenges. And the Pew study that ranked Oregon so highly in terms of its concentration in clean tech also shows that Oregon is not in the top 10 for venture capital in clean tech or patents in clean tech. So we have to be very aggressive, because this is an area where I think we don't compete as well with other metropolitan regions and states. We don't have a world-class research university in the city of Portland. We have research spread throughout our state in a variety of universities, so we have to be more conscious of pulling that together and driving toward innovation. We have to work harder to pull technology out of the university and commercialize it. The state has initiated a new signature research centers program to do precisely this, and it's a great start, but this is an area where we have catching up to do, and we really have to build our capacity. Likewise, we don't have the venture capital community either in the state of Oregon, nor are we attracting venture capital at the rate we would like to from Silicon Valley down south. So we really are working consciously to build this aspect of our economy, the research and development aspect of our economy, which is going to be so critical to driving innovation in the clean tech sector. So I will leave it at that.
Thank you. That concludes the presentation by the City of Portland at the Gaining Ground Resilient Cities Conference, October 20th, 2009. You heard Mayor Sam Adams plus city planners Susan Anderson and Aaron Flynn. Download this presentation from the city's page at ecoshock.org. That same morning, Sarah Severn of Nike, the shoemaker, outlined their efforts to green the global corporation. She covered such things as water usage, toxic materials, and manufacturing, and this brief on Nike and climate change. You can download Sarah Severn's full 26-minute presentation from the city's page at ecoshock.org.
So moving on to climate change, we've been working on this actually since 1995, largely because we had a global warming gas that was in our footwear. In the airbags, and any of you that have Nike shoes know that one of our core technologies is the airbags that provides the cushioning. And that's the true performance that's embedded in the shoe. And we discovered that the gas inside it, a gas called sulfur hexafluoride, was a global warming gas. Not only was it a global warming gas, it was 23,000 times more powerful than CO2 in terms of its warming effect. So we had to, we really had to address this. In 97, we set some targets around the phase out, and it proved to be pretty challenging. But, you know, we were doing all this at a time when there was still debate around the science, but we happened to believe in the science. And there was still no incentive for us. There wasn't a price on carbon. We were doing this with our own R&D and our own kind of efforts and money and investment. And so when I hear people say, it's too expensive, you can't do it, I say, well, you know, we managed to do it. This was our core technology. And we did. It was tens of millions of dollars. But what happens is you innovate in the process. And we were at a time where the patents for that air technology were actually due to expire. So we needed to do some level of innovation. And they actually came up with an innovation that resulted in being able to encapsulate nitrogen, which meant we had to have a change in the actual film itself that encapsulates that nitrogen. So that really, along the way, we worked with the World Wildlife Fund and we set some targets for our own operations with energy efficiency projects and the adoption of renewable energy. And so with that, we've done the sorts of things that are probably very common here in Vancouver. You know, we've put energy efficiency into existing buildings. We've done new buildings. We did one in Europe, which was built to be highly energy efficient. We have renewable energy where we can put it in place. And in fact, in one of our distribution centers in Belgium, we have windmills on site because we came up with an agreement between the local utility. They wanted the land. There's plenty of wind at the site. And now every time our CEO goes over there, he comes back saying, I want windmills on the campus. Well, we don't have a lot of wind at our campus, but we have got solar. So we've put some solar installations there. And we've done all of this without a price on carbon. And with a good price on carbon, there's much more that could be accessible both to us and to other businesses out there. So looking at that, though, if you actually look at the what we influence versus what we own, that's what we influence. And the energy used in materials is actually where the highest impact is. So there's a lot that we need to do around the choice of materials that goes into our products. But more than that, we felt that we had a role to play in the advocacy agenda around climate change. And there's some good reasons for that. This is about 18 months ago, we started to work on the idea of setting up a business coalition to work for climate change legislation, the passage of climate change legislation in the United States. And this was prior to the presidential election, so we didn't know what kind of a regime we were going to be faced with. And I think in November, round about the time of the election, actually, the group was formed. And the founding partners for this group, BICEP, which stands for Business for Innovative Climate and Energy Policy. The founding groups included Levi's, Starbucks, Sun Microsystems, and Timberland. And since then, we're up now to about 15 companies, including companies like eBay, The Gap, North Face, Cliff Bar, Aspen Ski, largely consumer-facing companies. We felt the voice of the consumer wasn't being heard in this debate. A lot of the voices in Washington were coming from the fossil fuel industry and from large emitters, and we felt that there was a role for companies such as ourselves to put forward their point of view. And if you look at it from a business case for Nike, there are three key things that we really care about. One is that we have global supply chains that are very vulnerable to the impacts of climate change, as are the communities where we do business. The second thing is that we have a young consumer, and they're passionate about this issue, and they're also the generation that's going to be the most impacted by whatever legacy we leave them. And the third is just, you know, our interest in innovation. We see this as a huge opportunity for innovation, and we're behind every effort that goes with that. And we want to see that innovation unleashed by having a price on carbon. So the principles, BICEP set up a series of principles that we said needed to be part of any legislation. And it includes really tough targets between 25 to 40% reduction over 1990 levels. And it's like, who forgot about 1990? Somebody said that to me today. Everybody's talking about 2005 and 2007 as a baseline. The science is telling us we have to start with 1990. There are other aspects of this. We talk about cap and trade, but we want 100% auction of allowances and an emphasis on renewables and energy efficiency, and in particular, green jobs. So Focus the Nation is a youth-based organization that we're also working with, which is helping bring the voice of youth together with legislators around the country in the United States to really get their voices heard. And we think we're having an impact. So, and this is one area where I think companies can really participate.
That was Sarah Severn of Nike speaking at the Resilient Cities Conference in Vancouver, Canada, on October 20, 2009. Find out more about the conference at gainingground summit.com. I'm Alex Smith. Download this Green Portland program from our city's page at ecoshock.org. And thank you for exploring what makes our cities greener.